Welcome to the Service CEA How It Works workshop. And you know, this goes along with our theme of service is freedom. Just a reminder that this workshop is being recorded. Once the workshop is recorded and reviewed by the CEA How WSO board or its delegates, it will be added to the CEA How website, where it will become part of public domain. So, if you do want to come up and use the microphone, which we hope you do, to ask a question, we ask you please sign the release waiver that's up on the table before you speak. Okay, so we'll have that. And before we get started, Pamela.
Hi, and welcome to Global Convention 2017, which is our 20th anniversary. And in celebrating our 20th anniversary, for the first time this year, we're offering an advance sign-up for next year's convention. And the advance sign-up is, if you sign up this weekend while you're here, you are locked into not only this year's rates, but a $40 discount from this year's rates. And we are also implementing for the first time an installment payment plan. If you sign up this weekend for $21, you are locked into $40 off this year's prices, and you can then pay the remainder in 10 monthly installments. And next year, you'll be all paid up and ready to go. We're happy to implement that this year, and we hope that that you can take advantage of it. Thanks.
Thank you. Sign me up. I'm going to do a very quick little warm-up here. Stand up, please, if you have served on the board of directors, including the front table. And stay standing.
You too.
Yeah, the guys in the back. Stand up if you have served as a delegate. Stand up if you have served in your area. Stand up if you've served your intergroup. Stand up if you've served at your meeting. Stand up if you sponsor others. So look around and applaud yourselves for the level of service and the commitment that you're all given. And you can sit down. So our workshop today is How It Works, and we're talking about how service works in various ways. What we're going to do is this. I'm going to introduce all four of the panelists right now so that I don't have to interrupt anything later on. And then they will each give a presentation on a different aspect of service. I did some calculations earlier, and among the four people at this table, there are 49 years and 2 months worth of service. And if you count my service, which I didn't bother adding in since I'm not speaking, there's over half a century of service at this table. And That shows, thank you, a lot of dedication. So first I'd like to introduce David M., who is from Los Angeles. I know that because so am I. He can't think of a service position he hasn't done. And believe me, that includes setting up chairs and putting away chairs when necessary. He did his first commitment after a week of abstinence. He has done intergroup service as the intergroup secretary, treasurer, and he's currently an intergroup treasurer. He's been in area assembly, an area to Area 1, and served as the delegate to the business conference. He has served on the Policy Manual Committee, the Finance Committee. He was elected to the board of the World Service Office. He elected vice chair and was chair of the board in 2013 and 2014. He is currently the finance chair of this convention. He sponsors a lot with thought and love. And he brought me back when I was out and ashamed and afraid to come back. So his service reaches from the highest level down to the most personal, and that's David. Sitting next to Pamela. Now, sitting next to David is Pamela. Sorry. She has been a member since we were OA How, and she's been absent since 1994. She began service above the meeting level in her first 30 days and has continued throughout. She was a member of the 12-Step Formation Committee from 1996 to 1998, which formed CEA How. So as I keep saying, she has a lot of our institutional memory and knows where the bodies are buried. No. I mean, she knows a lot. That's what I mean. She was a member of the very first CEA How Board of Directors in 1998, and she served on the board, including being the chair of the board, 2000 and to 2001 and 2007 to 2009. Since 2011, she has been the corporate president of CEA How, reporting to the board of directors and overseeing the World Service Office. She's been my friend and my guide and a great roommate for this convention. Next to Pamela is Carolyn. Carolyn started her service by reading at meetings as soon as she got into program 9.5 years ago. She started leading meetings at 30 days because she wanted the meetings to keep going, and she wanted her abstinence to continue. She began serving at the intergroup level at 60 days. You get this? People just step right up, and it keeps them coming back, and that's terrific. She was an intergroup rep, and she's been vice chair, secretary, and treasurer of the Phone Bridge Intergroup in Area 10. She became an area representative, and she has served as a delegate at WSBC's until 2014, was on many committees, including finance and policy manual. In 2014, she was elected to the WSO Board of Directors, and she continues to serve as treasurer of CEA How and the WSO Board. If you saw her financial presentation on Thursday, you know that she is both passionate and precise, and that passion and precision make her a great asset to CEA How. And at my far left is Beth. Beth has been serving in CEA How since February 3rd, 2011, day one, because she was abstinent. And we all know that abstinence is the greatest service to ourselves and the group. She began sponsoring after 30 days. She stepped up to become an intergroup rep. And in 2014, she became a WSBC delegate. And this is her fourth year as a delegate for Area 10. She has assisted with literature and website projects. She's grateful to be of service in this life-giving program. And we are grateful to have her, her energy, her enthusiasm, and her dedication. So now we will start with our first presentation, which will be David.
I'm David. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, David.
Hi. Welcome to everything you wanted to know about the structure of See How. It is something that's in the background, and it is here for us, but it is also here for those who have not yet found us, which I think in some ways is the most important. My portion is, this is the outline of our workshop. I'm going to talk how it flows, how the various groups interact with one another. And then Pamela will talk about changes, because that's her favorite subject, is change. Carolyn about funding, and Beth on service. So, and then we'll have some questions and answers at the end. So how it flows. See How has the inverted pyramid service structure, which is usually the model for all 12-step fellowships. It is to emphasize that those at the point at the bottom are not somehow in charge, that we are just servants, those of us who are privileged enough to serve at lower levels, in this case with the inverted pyramid, serve the groups as a whole. The CHOW groups, meaning the CHOW meetings, are the most numerous, and they are our lifeblood. Without meetings, there is no service structure. I believe you have handouts of all of these, so at least for the basics. So this chart shows how it works, basically, how both information, opinion, group conscience, money flows from one to another, and responsibility. So at the top are CHOW groups, which is meeting. Individual meetings will send intergroup reps to their intergroup. Intergroup will elect area representatives to go to assemblies. The assemblies send WSBC delegates to the business conference to have the group conscience of the fellowship as a whole. Each group manages itself. Each intergroup manages itself and communicates up and down within its local area. Over on the left of this, there are conference committees who are responsible for the workings of the fellowship as a whole. And for those of you who are privileged to serve on the business conference, you did the first part of this year's work on that. And below is the World Service Office, which runs the day-to-day activities of our fellowship. The following slides are excerpted from the bylaws. And the bylaws, although maybe torturous to read in parts, they spell out exactly what the rules are. What are the responsibilities of the individual groups? So the responsibility of each and every meeting is to adhere to the CHOW concept and the practices of the program. Make sure that people know when and where the meetings are. Don't do any secret things that would make newcomers not be able to find you. To share information and to voice opinions to the appropriate body, meaning the intergroup rep and the intergroup that it belongs to. Have literature available to its members. Also to forward any excess money that it collects over what it needs for its own business to its intergroup, its area assembly, and World Service. And for communication purposes, importantly, to elect intergroup representatives so that it can be a part of the fellowship. Without an intergroup member, it's kind of on its own. It doesn't hear what's going on locally, and the intergroups are informed by World Service about what's happening in the fellowship, and it is the responsibility of the intergroup rep to keep the local members informed. Of course, sometimes the task is a little daunting for them because there's a lot of information, but it's important that it be made available. I followed my sponsor to an intergroup meeting when I had less than 2 months, and I've sort of been there ever since, except when I went to the board, and it's enriched my recovery immensely. So I definitely encourage sponsees to get involved. Above the groups are the intergroups, two or more meetings in a geographic proximity, or two or more electronic or voice participation meetings may form an intergroup. All it takes is two meetings if someone is interested. to form an intergroup. Their purpose is much the same as individual groups, but on a broader, a somewhat broader level. The main thing is to act as the guardian of the program, to assist individual meetings, continue to practice CHOW as it's written, to help its own groups, to facilitate the starting of new meetings, to distribute CHOW literature to its member meetings, and make sure it's not some, you know, it so it's easy for them to get the literature. To facilitate communication and participation in the CHOW organizational structure. That just means telling their meetings what's going on and to send area reps to the area assemblies that happen twice a year. To facilitate discussion and resolution of local issues as appropriate. So these are the areas. I mentioned areas. Everyone know what area they're in? I mean, we're all service junkies, or we wouldn't be here, I don't think. We're all committed to service and how it works. We have a graphic here of the United States with the West Coast, the immediate West Coast being Area 1, the middle west portion from Nevada to Kansas, and from Montana to Texas being Area 2, the sort of classic Midwest, Minnesota to Ohio and down to Kentucky being Area 3, New England and as far down as Virginia in the Mid-Atlantic as 4, and as far east as West Virginia, and the south as Area 5. 6 is Mexico. 7 is, well, 8 is Australia. 7 is Israel and other countries outside of North America. 9 is Canada. And 10 is electronic or voice participation meetings, i.e. the phone bridge, i.e. Skype meetings. There are a few. Although, to my knowledge, there's not a Skype intergroup yet. No, but there may be, and certainly could be. So the area's responsibility are to, again, guard the fellowship, to support its local intergroups, to disseminate information from the World Service Business Conference, to address local concerns as appropriate within the area. Also to encourage areas within the intergroup, within the area that haven't participated. To discuss and endorse as appropriate or as it feels appropriate to send motions to the business conference. The intergroups can, individual members and the intergroups can develop motions to change aspects of the literature or other parts of the program that Pamela will go into more detail about how that works. But an important part of the area assembly is to say yay or nay to endorsing proposals to the business conference for consideration by the fellowship as a whole, and then importantly to elect delegates to the business conference. I was in the area once, and then I went to World Service, and it was kind of a whirlwind experience. But I'm glad I did. My first year was very bewildering, but after a little, I was told that if service was hard or I didn't like it or it was confusing, that I wasn't doing enough. So, and that certainly worked for me. Doing more of it made me better at it. On to the World Service Business Conference. It is the group conscience of the fellowship as a whole. We all come from different regions when we go to the business conference, but this is where, once we get here, we represent the fellowship of the as a whole, those who are in the rooms and those who are not in the rooms. We try to keep an open mind, to think as broadly as possible. It's composed of delegates from the areas, as we just saw, World Service Board members, both participating and non-participating directors, the co-founders, this is according to the bylaws. Fred S. Passed away in 2004, so he's obviously not able to participate, and Ray is going to be 97 soon, so she's no longer allowed to travel, at least by her doctor, but she has participated on it for a very long time, and the bylaws accord them a position on the board. Officers of CHOW who are not also elected directors have a voice at conference, meaning that they can speak to motions, that they can present reports, that they can participate in discussion, but when it comes down to it, where a vote is called to see whether something is approved or not, they do not vote. They are merely advisory in that sense. There's an agenda in advance. How am I doing on time? Minute and a half. There's an agenda in advance so that the conference's time is not wasted. This is critical because we've all come from far away. I believe there was a UK member at conference this year, which is awesome, plus participation from Mexico. So can't just come to talk about stuff that should have been resolved at an intergroup or an area. That is a waste of time and is the responsibility of more local level service bodies. Reports are given, the development of literature, new things about sponsorship, public outreach. The board, the CHOW World Service Organization, which is bandied around a lot, OWSO says this, that, and the other, the board of directors are 8 participating directors and up to 3 non-participating directors. A non-participating director is a real service junkie who is not a member of the CHOW Fellowship but has something to offer. We are privileged to have a history of service from people outside of our fellowship with a lot of recovery in another program, which I won't mention. But they have been invaluable in giving us guidance as to our organization, finance, and many other things, and are very calming. I am almost out of time. Officers, president, treasurer, vice president, secretary. Purpose is much the same. Daily activities. I'm almost at the end. To manage our resources responsibly. The board gets to answer questions when you send an email, you know, and that's one of the things I kind of miss from being on the board, is the director of the month question, where you get to, and not just shoot off your own answer, but do it collegially, you know, in a body, and that really benefited my personal recovery a lot. World Service orders more literature when we buy it all up. you know, and that is a more, being in the publishing business is not as sexy as it might sound, but it's necessary. Without literature, we're sunk. And then all the miscellaneous things that fall to no one else is scooped up, particularly in environments like this. And that is my time. One last word. The convention is outside of this. It's alongside, but it is the convention directly of the fellowship as a whole. And it works well with the other groups, but it is independent, and if you have more questions, you'll ask me at the end. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Pamela, and I'm a grateful member of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, the How concept. And I would like to address that, I think, first, the How concept. We always say Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How, or CEA How. And yes, the HOW does stand for honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, which we get from the big book. In our name, really, the how stands for the how concept, which is basically our constitution. That is our underlying document, the how concept. I always feel it's very important to use our full name, CEA How or Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How. We are not just CEA, we are not just Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. And I believe the How concept is what defines us in the 12-step community. We use the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts of service, as do other 12-step groups, and we do that by the generous permission of AA. However, we also adhere to the How concept, and the How concept specifically says these are not suggestions. The 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 7 tools, and the How concept are not suggestions. They are requirements for our recovery. And the How concept says we are a structured and disciplined approach to working the 12 steps. And that is how we differ from many other 12-step fellowships. We are a structured and disciplined approach. And we have certain guidelines that we follow. Everybody is welcome. Everybody is encouraged to come to CEA How. The requirements for our recovery, however, are the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 7 tools, which include our abstinence requirement, our food plan, our literature, are part of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, the How concept. Okay, we've seen the service structure. I think we're all familiar with the inverted pyramid that explains our various levels of service bodies, and David has explained that thoroughly and well. I'll move on to next, see how it changes. And yeah, I do like change. I love change. Although sometimes I think there are many benefits to having been here and seeing how we've grown. I mean, I cannot tell you how exciting it is after 20 years to see the difference between our first conference and convention and where we are today at 20 years. One of the drawbacks to having been here at that time, I contend to be a dinosaur, you know, in personal, I can say, well, we always did it this way. We shouldn't change it. We've always done it that way. On the other hand, I do love to change, and I love the changes that have come to CEA How and how we've grown, as long as we maintain the basics, which we do. So see how it changes. The change comes from every single level. And again, because of the inverted pyramid, we know that the most important part of our program is us, the individual members. We're all individual members, no matter what service we do. We're at bottom individual members sponsoring each other. Third, I don't know, is it the preface or the foreword, to the big book has a great line that each day somewhere in the world, recovery begins with one alcoholic, I'll say compulsive eater, sharing experience, strength, and hope with another. And so it all does start with the member. And then we do service with our groups, our intergroups, our areas. And the reason this slide is set up with all arrows going back and forth from World Service Board of Directors and Corporate Officers is that we are all intertwined. It should probably be a big circle, really, that we're all intertwined. And as David indicated, WSO is sort of a catch-all phrase. it refers to, on our bylaws, it actually says World Service Organization bylaws, WSO. We commonly think of WSO at the as the World Service Office. The World Service Office is not just a building. It's not just the employees who work there. It is also the board of directors and the corporate officers. It's just sort of all rolled together into the WSO. And also, it really is important that WSO doesn't do anything. As David just explained, we have all levels of service bodies, and as I will explain more fully in the next slide, the changes are made by us at whatever level of service we serve. The changes are made by us as members and by individuals. So this slide shows that it basically what WSO is a conduit. It's kind of like the central clearinghouse. WSO gets telephone calls and emails from members all over the world, and WSO then sends that communication to the appropriate party. It may go to a conference committee. It may go to an area. It may go to an intergroup. It may go to the board of directors or a specific director. And so that's what WSO does. Serves as a conduit. Now, the changes, the exciting stuff. I mentioned our bylaws. Our bylaws, as was mentioned in my bio, I was on the 12-step formation committee that started CEA Howe. Howe formally was registered with our sister fellowship, and in 1995 we received a letter from that sister fellowship saying that their interpretation of the 12 traditions was different from ours, and in order to remain registered with our sister fellowship and meet their interpretation of the traditions, they asked us to no longer use our Howe concept, our seven-day abstinence requirement, our food plan, and our literature. At that time, there was only one Howe intergroup. We sent out a letter to all of the registered Howe meetings and gave them with a copy of the letter from our sister fellowship, and said, if you would like to remain registered with the sister fellowship, fine. If you would like to be part of a new fellowship which maintains the CEA Howe concept, we are forming a new fellowship. And it took about 2 years of meetings to form that new fellowship. We had to come up with a name, which is a pretty interesting thing. Many people think Compulsive Eaters Anonymous Howe is a cumbersome name, CEA Howe. We kind of like the idea that it could be abbreviated into CEA Howe. And the main reason Compulsive Eaters Anonymous Howe was chosen, was voted upon by the members of the 12-step formation committee, was we wanted to be inclusive, that we were an inclusive food program. We weren't just for binging. We weren't just for overeating. We were an inclusive program that included bulimics, anorexics, overeaters, anyone who had an issue with food. And I always like to share that sometimes people comment on our seven-day abstinence requirement as being restrictive. And Fred's explanation, Fred S., our co-founder, Fred's explanation for that is that we are an inclusive program and we include recovery in our meetings. So that in our meetings, we go to a meeting, we hear recovery because everybody has at least 7 days of abstinence. And I don't know about you kids, but I was crazy when I was eating, and nobody wanted to listen to me. So we include recovery in our meetings, and see how it's set up so that those who don't have 7 days of abstinence not only have the opportunity, they're required to share their brains out, you know, on a daily basis with a sponsor in 3 outreach calls. So it's set up so it is, in fact, inclusive. So the bylaws, I was going to talk about the bylaws. The bylaws primarily were based on the original 12-step fellowship. And we were called the General Service Office, similar to the original 12-step fellowship. And then somewhere along the line, you know, boards change and the flavor of each board changes. And one board decided we should change it to World Service Office or World Service rather than General Service. The bylaws are in three parts. And the first part deals with the board of directors and how the board of directors functions. And changes to the bylaws can be made by the board of directors in part A only, which deals with the board of directors. We have parts A, B, and C. I'm going to skip to C. Part C deals with the World Service, deals with intergroups, with groups, intergroups, areas, and the World Service Business Conference. Part C of the bylaws can only be changed or amended by vote of the board of directors and the delegates at the annual World Service Business Conference. And then Part B of the bylaws contains the 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts of service, 7 tools. I think that's it. Concept. And the See How concept. And Part B, because that is the bedrock of our fellowship, can only be changed by vote of the board of directors, vote of the delegates at the annual World Service Business Conference, and vote of all of the registered CEA How meetings worldwide who must respond within 6 months, and at least 50% of the groups must respond. And in order to approve whatever the amendment is going to be, 3/4 of the return votes must be in favor of the change. So you can see that's a pretty difficult sort of thing to do. And the reason it's set up with so restrictively is, you know, A, we don't really have the right to change the 7 or the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts of service. We could change the 7 tools. And often, you know, you probably have ideas about changing the tools. We all do. But this is the only way we can do it, is this board, World Service Business Conference, 50% of the groups responding and approving by within 6 months and approving by 3/4%. So some changes, because they're not as substantive, are not that difficult. Some changes are very difficult for very good reasons. I often hear people say, you know what World Service did now? They said we had to. And that World Service is us, you know, it's all of us. This is how it changes. This is how we make changes in our fellowship. First of all, it's all done by us, by members, and it's done at the World Service Business Conference by the delegates. And the delegates are, you know, it's you at a meeting, you're elected to be an intergroup rep, you go to your intergroup meetings, and then you're elected to be an area rep. Oh, my goodness, you go to an annual area assembly, and oh, my goodness, you get elected to be a delegate. You go to the World Service Business Conference. You then are making these decisions for the entire fellowship. That's how it's done. And you'll see by that slide, the changes start with the fellowship, either as a member, group, intergroup, area, conference committee, and it ends with the fellowship. Starts with the fellowship. At the World Service Business Conference, motions are submitted, and the motions may come from a member, an individual member, from a group, from an intergroup, from an area, from a conference committee. Generally, a member or a group will suggest a change which will be taken to their intergroup. The intergroup will discuss it and say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get a motion on the agenda at the annual World Service Business Conference and change this. And the intergroup then will send that motion to their area. The area representatives will talk about the motion, discuss the motion, and say, yeah, that's really important for the whole fellowship. Let's endorse that motion. They then send that motion to the conference agenda committee. Again, it's not to World Service, it's to us, the conference agenda committee. The conference agenda committee reviews the motion only for purposes of ensuring that it meets the criteria of the CEA How guidelines, that it's not an outside issue, that it's an issue that that is relevant to the fellowship as a whole, in the strictest sense that it's an expressed need of the fellowship. This really needs to be done. Sometimes it doesn't really need to be done, but it's a good idea. You know, that great line in the 12 and 12 tradition too, the good is enemy of the best. Sometimes we get the good, sometimes we get the best. The motion then goes to the agenda committee, which reviews the motion to make sure it's very clear in intent, in language. So that when it goes to the World Service Business Conference, the delegates will understand exactly what they're voting on. They won't have to say, well, do they mean this? Do they mean this? And believe me, in early years, I cannot tell you when the motions were not vetted as carefully. A lot of time was spent trying to figure out what they actually meant. So the conference agenda committee will ensure that the motion is understandable, is appropriate for the fellowship as a whole. They then send it to the board of directors, who does a second review for the same purposes, not whether it's a good idea, but whether it meets the guidelines. It then goes to the delegates at the World Service Business Conference, who will discuss it, and believe me, ad nauseum sometimes, and you never know which ones are going to get the discussion, which are not. And the vote on it, if it's approved, it goes back to the fellowship. So all these changes start with the fellowship and end with the fellowship. It's not WSO did this. It's that this is what we're doing for all of us. So that's how changes are made. So if anything that you feel would benefit the fellowship as a whole, you're the one who can suggest that to your group, to your intergroup, to your area, and get it on the World Service Business Conference agenda.
We talked a lot about the different levels of service, and I will just say I know for me, and Cheryl gave a little bit of history about each of our services, but I know for me what I say is service has kept me in the boat, and just can't reinforce enough how much service has meant to, what I believe has meant to my recovery. I can't even imagine how it might have been if I had not been in service all these years, and how I would have, I just see myself as being kind of picked off the edges had I not stayed in the boat with service. So I'm grateful for our service structure, and I'm grateful for the reinforcement of service in our program. What I was going to talk a little bit about is, as we say, see how it's funded. This workshop kind of germinated out of the question that comes up a lot about where does Seventh Tradition go? You know, where does this money go? And it's always kind of the Seventh Tradition. And usually I hear that other people are asking, you know, about the Seventh Tradition and where Seventh Tradition goes. So hopefully I'm going to spend a little bit of time helping to understand where Seventh Tradition goes. But first and foremost, we talked a lot about service, and I have a quote here from Ebby, as one of you know, the very early part of AA. Right then and there, Ebby established that the principle that AA in action calls for the sacrifice of much time and money. And that comes from AA Comes of Age, page 141. I want to change that to include in our own documentation that right then and there, Carolyn established the principle that CHOW in action calls for much for sacrifice of much time and of much money. So put that in the record. Okay. This just shows a little bit, many of you probably know, but about how Seventh Tradition flows. And again, this is what we're really talking about, Seventh Tradition. I've also mentioned, noted here, other income that every group should be self-supporting. And it really starts, of course, with the member, and that's a little bit hard to read, but with the member giving to the meeting level. And then with the meeting level, through our bylaws, as Pamela was talking about our bylaws, there's a distribution that goes from after the meeting covers their own expenses, then 50% goes to the intergroup, 20% goes to the area, and 30% comes up to World Service. And as each of those levels has any additional, then the intergroup has their own 50%. Then after paying expenses, if there's surpluses, those get distributed out to the area and to World Service. And again, down to when we look at the area, the area then also covers their own expenses and then distributes, and we just go around. And what is not reflected here, but I really wanted to reinforce, is down at the bottom, World Service here then sews all this back into the overall fellowship to serve CHOW as a whole. And I'll be getting a little bit more into a little bit more specifics as to how that happens. But at each of these levels, as is noted here, we have operating expenses. Each level generally has a prudent reserve. If it's at the meeting level, it might be just to cover their next month's worth of meeting rental, but just some level of reserve there. Again, and then surplus flowing back through the system to ultimately serve CHOW as a whole. And I do mention these surpluses, and there is a quote also from AA. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. And so just to reinforce that we really want to keep the funds moving through the system. I know for us, I was Phonebridge treasurer, you know, we just really kept our prudent reserve and moved everything through. Every 2 months, the balance would be distributed and just back down to the prudent reserve. Phonebridge has a little bit more flexibility because they don't put on as many different events and things like that require some more funding. But just to keep that process moving, and it was very disciplined, and I walked into that level of discipline, and we kept it going. To talk about how each of these, some of the things that are done at each of the levels, and how seventh, you know, back to the question, how seventh tradition is used. Many of you probably know at a meeting level, you know, they have to pay for room rental, coffee and tea, water, literature, inventory, any kind of public information materials that flow through at the meeting level. You who work at, you know, everyone's been exposed at the meeting level. Those may be the most common. There could be some other things at any given meeting level. At the inner group, often brings in and builds up an amount of literature so that they can send that back out to the meetings. So when they come in and request literature, it's there. And so that takes some funding to be able to send in to World Service to get that literature purchased. There's also, depending on the intergroup, and I'm not even sure if there are intergroups now that also have an office staff or accounting, but at one point there were intergroups that actually had their own offices. Most intergroups would have a bank account, so there might be bank fees that are included in that. They might have seed money that's used to fund an event coming up, so they might need to put a deposit down for an event or purchase some things before they have income coming in for a given event. Again, public information. They might have some of the intergroups have their own website, so that there might be some expenses related to that. Some of the intergroups also have a nonprofit status, so what's called 501c3, so that donations that come into the intergroup are tax deductible to the giver. And I did also put a note here just for those of you who may work with the intergroups and area levels, is that now it is much easier than it's ever been and less expensive than it's ever been to get your 501c3 status. They have a new process it's been a year or 2 years now, maybe even what's called a 1023EZ, and it costs $275 now to actually get that 501c3. It used to be $800, and you used to have to get incorporated and just go through a whole big process to be able to get 501c3, but the government wanted to facilitate this process and make it easier, and within a month you can be 501c3, so it actually works really well. There is information on the website, CHOW.org website, on this under common member questions and the CHOW structure. So anybody who's representing an intergroup, or you happen to be at a meeting, or want to prompt your intergroup to get that status so that your own donations can be tax deductible, we encourage you to do that. Then looking at the area level, let me just back to my own notes here. Area, one of the most prominent, at least from my view, as to what the area does is, of course, bring what we've talked about is the service structure, and we have the area representatives who become delegates who come up to WSBC, and one of the more expensive functions, particularly if there is any travel involved, is to send the delegates to WSBC. There's a registration fee that comes in that the areas pay, as well as then the travel expenses for the delegates, and that is an incredible service that the area does in terms of having the area representative and the work that they do, as well as then providing the delegates up to the WSBC to represent all of you, all of us in that work that's done that has been talked about quite a bit this morning already. In some cases, I actually have travel for IG reps to attend area assemblies. That amount can be, depending on, you know, if it's Southern California, it may not, they may just be travel that's involved in, you know, just mileage. But in some other cases, in these other, you saw the areas, there's people that might have to come in from intergroups if they actually do get together, might travel in a little bit further. And so that expense could potentially fall at the intergroup level or at the area level. So that's some of how that might be used. Again, bank accounts, accounting, nonprofit status at those levels too. And again, I'm sure others who are working at the area and other levels would have many more examples. Oh, the thing I didn't also note that some of the areas do put on area assemblies. Some have various events that they put on as an area. So those all, again, would be other ways that the funding is used at those levels. So that is, again, part of how the seventh tradition is used. What I was going to do is spend a little bit of time talking about how seventh tradition, as it flows through, you saw the flow through that goes down, you know, to WSO. And what I put here was just where we have the seventh tradition contributions, which is generally what you would look at here. I basically looked at WSO, looking at where the income comes in, just to kind of, for those of you who aren't exposed to at the World Service level, kind of how it just looks from this perspective. And so contributions, so when we get contributions as that flow through comes through, as the 30% and of any surpluses that come through, and as well as contributions that come directly from members. Some members make direct contributions, and sometimes, you know, obviously you know that there's Gratitude Month that is considered directly through the member to WSO. So total contributions, so really kind of what we all really think about as seventh tradition, makes up about 41% of the income that WSO sees. So again, about 6% from the members, 31% really flows through from that seventh tradition, and then the areas contribute about 4%, and this is all based on 2016. Literature, you all know that there's, of course, literature sales and that whole process, and that makes up about 22% of the income at the WSO level. The conferences make up about 3%, and the convention, which we're at today, and again, this is based on 2016, makes up about 33%. So there's a lot of sources that come into WSO that actually fund and are used to cover the expenses of WSO. I also did make a note there that you can make donations directly to WSO, including setting up recurring contributions as well. So you can contribute to your meetings and intergroups and have it flow that way, but also direct contributions. So this is where the income comes through. So then the next slide I cover, which has a lot of detail on it, but is where it goes. Where does World Service actually spend its money? And about 58% of the expenses of WSO go to what I call kind of general services. And Pamela and David, we talked a lot about those types of things just to keep CHOW functioning and have kind of a central area that just moves us all together. I think one of the things that I know for me was that I love about CHOW is the consistency of the program everywhere. I had been in other organizations where it was just very different wherever you go. It's just a very, very different program. They run it totally different, and that was not appealing to me. I really loved that as I talked to anybody, it was generally the same. And that was very appealing to me, and that's what was kind of appealing to me to work, to get involved at the higher levels to find out how all this worked. But again, that takes some centralization of services. And so with that, we have the World Service Office, as Pamela mentioned, and with that, again, tons of communications that come through every day up to World Service, whether it be members asking questions, intergroups asking questions, areas asking questions, board members asking questions, and newcomers, you know, people that are not part of our fellowship yet. And that is the most important reason why it's there, is there's some central place where people, if they see something on a website or somewhere, they can come get that information. So that comes through. So we need those people there to be able to do that. And I will be wrapping up here soon. but there's also, you know, we just have the office. We have accounting. We have a nonprofit status that needs to be managed and maintained. Then there's just the website. That's all. So we have two part-time people who basically staff that office and do all of these services and facilitate all of this. When we're looking at the actual costs, we have the literature that's about 8%. That convention and conference together is quite a bit of expense to put that on. That's about 34% of the expenses. And then we have special projects that are undertaken. For right now, some of you have heard that we're doing an e-literature project, so that we're going to launch out that you can actually have all of our literature ultimately on one of your e-readers and have it be available to you wherever, if you travel or whether you read on your PC. So that's another service that's done. And this is my last slide. And so this is just basically, after we take into account all the expenses, this is how it really looks, and this is what funds the general services. So the contributions, because there's very little direct expense related to those contributions, make up about 73% of what covers that general service, all that work that's done at the general service level. Literature contributes about 25%, and the conference actually costs us money, and it's generally offset with the income that comes in, the bottom line income that comes in from the convention. So that's kind of the story about, if that's, hopefully that answers some of the question of where Seventh Tradition, how Seventh Tradition is used and how it flows through the system. So that was my goal.
Good morning. I'm Beth Compulsiviter. So I'm here to talk about my experience in service. In 2015, World Service Business Conference, I was shocked by the power of the minority voice. What does that mean? Well, as David mentioned in his slide, in the things we do to pass motions, we use the parliamentary procedure. So in 2015, World Service Business Conference, we had a motion on the table. We had discussions with pros and cons, and the motion passed with the majority votes necessary to pass the motion. We call it a quorum, but I'm not going to go into all those details. So it's a little bit more than just the majority, but it's, I think it's two-thirds. And then with parliamentary procedures, the minority voice is given an opportunity to share. So people came up who voted against the original motion, and they expressed why they didn't agree with the motion. And we agreed to take a revote. The vote was counted again, and it did not pass. And that was the final result. And it was just a really powerful experience to see the power of our voice and of our service and fellowship and how we work together when it starts with a fellowship and ends with a fellowship, as Pamela showed in her presentation. So I'm going to talk why I serve. Why did I become a delegate? Why do I come to World Service Business Conferences? Why am I abstinent? I'm going to start with our literature, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 89, chapter 7, Working with Others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from our drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. And this is a promise that we have from working with others. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to help them, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience that you must not miss. We know that you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. So why do I serve? I like to be involved. I like to connect with people and collaborate and get action taken care of. I like to learn new skills. For example, I was recently invited to be Area 10 treasurer, and I had the opportunity to open up a bank account for a nonprofit organization. I forgot. I was so passionate about what I was talking about. We have slides. So this is my inverted pyramid that shows my service level, which I'll get to in a minute. But, for example, I was able to learn a new skill in opening up a nonprofit bank account, and it was a unique experience learning what documents I needed and to take the responsibility for being able to fund our delegates and pay and reimburse them. So learning new skills. Another reason I give service is to get out of myself. It's freedom from bondage, the theme of our convention this weekend. Abstinence. The way that I can remain abstinent is by being of service. And by being of service, I'm abstinent. And our program needs us. We are a WE program. We're a program of fellowship. We're a program of volunteers. We're a program of staying within our fellowship to do the work that's necessary to carry the message to the still suffering compulsive eater. And it's also really exciting to see how what we do and the products we create benefit all members. I was on the literature committee, and we've published several books of questions and been able to continue to produce more pamphlets for the fellowship, for the whole. So how do I get all this done? How does it work? How much time does this take? I have a full-time job. I'm married. I have health issues. I have life, but I'm able to manage through time management. The more commitments I have, the more responsible I have to be with my time. So first of all, I'm abstinent. That is how I've serviced to myself. And at the meeting level, I use tools, steps, and traditions daily. I attend meetings. I share at meetings. I read at meetings. I lead meetings occasionally. In the past, I've been a speaker seeker, and that takes several hours a week. I almost call see how my part-time job. I get home from work, and I'm on meetings, or I'm doing food prep, and I'm taking care of myself. When it comes to the intergroup level, the next level in the yellow, we meet once every 2 months for about an hour, hour 15 minutes. And that is a commitment I have every 2 months. And then I make the commitment at a home meeting to read the intergroup announcements that I represent once a week. If I was on the intergroup executive board, that would be a more significant time commitment. Next is the area. I'm currently the area 10 treasurer, where I help pay expenses. I deposit the intergroup checks that are sent to me from our intergroups, and I help pay delegate expenses who come to the conference and tally up the receipts and issue them their money that we've allotted them for their expenses. And that, I'd say, takes 1 to 3 hours a month, depending on the season and the time available. Especially around convention areas, it's much busier in this time. Then the next commitment I have is as a delegate. I'm on the literature committee. Every delegate has two committees that they're expected to serve on for a year. So when we attend the World Service Business Conference, it's not just a weekend in Vegas. It is a 8:30 to 4:30 working day that we vote on motions, we discuss the health of our fellowship, we have working lunches for our committees. And when I'm doing delegate work in my committees, it's hard to guess, but I would say about 3 hours per month of each committee. For meetings, we attend usually about one meeting every 2 months on the phone. That lasts about an hour. And then we have different projects. I was the chair of these committees, and that required more responsibility of emailing people, reminding them for meetings, creating an agenda, gathering topics. And so it just takes, you know, a commitment, a responsibility. And then as a delegate, as I mentioned, attending World Service Business Conference, it's Wednesday night, it's all day Thursday, all day Friday, and we work together for the fellowship as a fellowship. So I really want to encourage all of us to really think about our time, our priorities, and what it means to serve. As sponsors, sponsees, that starts at the grassroots levels on a daily basis. We take calls, we give calls, and how often do we talk about our service activities, our service levels? I'm based on this conference, I've been inspired to start asking my sponsees, who have you served today? How are you going to serve today? What meeting are you going to lead? What inner group are you going to represent? Would you like to support the area? How are you going to do that? And it's really making it a gentle approach. And service is the lifeblood of our program and the lifeblood of our abstinence. So I just want to conclude in saying how grateful I am for the opportunity to serve and the willingness on people's behalf to serve. Coming to this convention is a sense of service. I mean, there are so many ways that we serve, and it's such a great opportunity to get out of our comfort zones and to meet new people and try new things. You know, I was worried being an Area 10 treasurer. How am I going to open up a bank account? I don't know. I've never done a nonprofit, and I go to the bank, and they look at me funny and like, what program are you in? And what, you don't have a building here? And you're, it's just so many questions. But the good news is we have a fellowship with people who have come before us, and we're supported, and we can get the answers that we're seeking. We're, as David was mentioning too, the director of the month answers emails. And so if you've got questions, you can ask your sponsor who asked their sponsor. I mean, we're not alone. And service may be daunting, it may be a little scary, but when I pray about it and ask my higher power, who can I serve? What do I need to do? How can I strengthen my program? How can I strengthen this fellowship? The answer will come, and my higher power will give me the strength to keep moving forward and to be able to be abstinent so I can serve this fellowship and this program. So I'm incredibly grateful, and I just really encourage you to keep on serving. Thank you. So as an application of our discussion of learning how it works and how it changes and how we serve and how it's funded, we want you to make a commitment to service. Oops. So as I just already mentioned those. So our activity is to write down 3 new service goals and a new commitment to your 7th tradition that you have for this year. When finished, turn to a person next to you and share those goals with the person, and then write down the person's phone number. Then call in a few months and see how those goals are going. If you don't have paper with you, there are extra notepads on the table, and we will give you several minutes to do this activity. And then you can come up to the microphone to either share that commitment or to ask the panel any questions. Thank you.
So when you finish your goals, yeah, turn to your partner, make a commitment. If you don't know somebody, get their phone number, make a friend, get a service buddy. Okay, so share your commitment and make a plan to call your service buddy in a month, 2 months, see how it's going, check in, be responsible. So now the panel is open. We've got about 10 minutes left for questions.
Hi, everybody. Rhonda, compulsive eater.
Hi, Rhonda.
Could someone explain the time limits, how long you serve as a delegate, maybe how long you serve as an intergroup rep, how long you serve at the area? Explain the spirit of rotation a little bit.
Hi, thanks, Rhonda. I talked about our WSO bylaws. Intergroups have bylaws, areas have bylaws. And the service for intergroup rep is defined in the intergroup bylaws. The service for area rep, and for area rep, I believe, also is in the intergroup bylaws. And perhaps also in the area bylaws. So they vary by intergroup and by area. I can address the World Service bylaws. Members can serve as delegates for 8 years. Delegates are elected at area assemblies for 2-year terms, and they can be reelected 3 times for a total of 8 years. And directors on the board of directors are elected at the World Service Business Conference for a 2-year term, and they may be reelected once and serve on the board for a total of 4 years. At the end of 4 years, they rotate off the board and must remain off the board for at least 1 year before they are eligible to be reelected to the board. Did that cover all the areas?
Michael, compulsive eater.
And Michael.
And one of the things that I think it's great with the activity of 7th tradition commitment, and for me, it's actually a spiritual act. And because there are days when I really believe that if I give more than a dollar, I'm going to go bankrupt and never be able to eat again. And it's ridiculous, you know, but in that moment. And it's a way for me to, and what I've done is, for every year that I have abstinence, I give that plus a dollar. So I give $4 to each meeting. And again, there are times when I'm like, that $4 is going to be the difference between me being able to send my kids to college or not. But what I have found is that it really does strengthen my connection to God, because I really do believe in that moment that I'm surrendering and that I'll be okay. So just another way to think of that. And then the other thing that we do as an intergroup, San Fernando Valley, is we have on the second week of each month, we have a second basket that goes around and goes directly to the intergroup. So to cover intergroup expenses, and then a surplus goes on. And we suggest a $5 donation, and we usually collect anywhere from, you know, $40 to $100 extra a month doing that. So just as an idea.
That's great. For some people with long-term absence, that'd be a lot of money to give at every meeting. It would affect their kids' college education. I love that. That's great. Any other questions or comments?
Judy W., compulsive eater.
Hi.
Maybe you just need to direct me to the literature about this, but I inherited the literature for the intergroup of Arizona intergroup, and I don't know if I'm supposed to mark it up to make some money in order to donate, or how that works, that it keeps...
As you may or may not know, literature is sold to the intergroups at a discounted rate, and that is to allow the intergroups to add a markup to help support their intergroup if they need it. Many intergroups, as has been mentioned, do not have offices to support or office managers, so they have no overhead. Many intergroups sell the literature to their groups at the discounted rate that it is sold to them by World Service. But it's up to each individual intergroup to do what they want to do, depending on their needs and their desires.
Okay. Hi, I'm Susan, compulsive eater. My question is, are there requirements for abstinence or at any point that you're in the 12 steps to serve in these capacities in intergroup or group or delegate or any of those things? Where do you have to be in your program?
Yes, there are. There are. Do you know them exactly?
To be on WSO and... Don't just somebody Woo. Not on the conference. There is a new piece of literature which will be coming out. Yeah, it's the service trifold. And it says from meeting level, you know, 30 days of abstinence to share, 90 days of abstinence to be secretary, treasurer, etc. Intergroup rep, 90 days of abstinence is required or suggested. Area rep, 1 year. World Service delegate, 2 years of continuous absence, 3 years in the fellowship. Past the 3 years of membership is waived if you have the 2 years of abstinence. And the commitment to do the traditions questions. So sponsees know that if I'm having them do the traditions questions, they got to look out for what they're going to be doing. But this is a service trifold, which was approved just Thursday, and will be available soon. That will spell this all out.
Wonderful.
Because
Thank
others
you
have
so
had
much.
Questions just like that.
Wow, was that ideal, huh?
30 days to speak at a meeting, not to be a leader, 7 days if you've discussed with your sponsor to pitch at a meeting. So by pitch, I mean a 3 or whatever minute share at the meetings. But yeah, 30 days to lead a meeting. The sponsor guide for conventions and other workshops has a longer abstinence requirement.
So this has been terrific. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned a lot. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your service.